Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Moonbroken by H.D. Gordon. Narrated by Rachel DeLude. Chapter 1. I had never seen anything like it. Hell, I'd never even imagined anything like it. If someone had asked me a week prior if the existence of such a place were even possible, I'd have laughed my head off at the absurdity of the suggestion. I'd have pegged them for a fool. But here I stood. And there it stood. My eyes probed it distrustfully, as though it might be a mirage, a nightmare shrouded in the guise of a dream. There was a soft chuckle behind me, and I turned on my heels to face the mixed breed. His scarlet eyes glittered with the amusement I'd come to expect from him. The male seemed to take nothing seriously. "What the hell is that?" I asked with a wave of my hand. Adriel's smile was as handsome as a devil's. "That is Mina," he said, his slight accent caressing the name. "And Mina is home." Home. The words seemed to clang through my head. I'd never had a home. I wasn't even entirely sure I knew what a home was. I understood the concept, of course, but understanding something logically and knowing something through actual experience were entirely different things. Even slaves knew that. "Former slave," a faint voice in my head reminded me. My hand came up and brushed the base of my neck, where a binding collar no longer hung. I squinted into the distance. "And what are those?" I asked, my voice coming out softer than I'd intended.
"Those are mountains,"
the mixed breed replied, and now there was a touch of pity mingling with the humor in his tone. I ignored his unwanted sympathy. I'd never seen mountains so monstrously enormous in all my life. Then, again, I was beginning to suspect there were a whole multitude of things most slaves never got to see. I was suddenly afraid. And as was my default reaction to the emotion, I put up my defenses. Crossing my arms over my chest and ignoring the pain it caused in my battered body, I narrowed my gaze on Adriel. "If this is some kind of trap, you'll regret it," I warned. Adriel's beautiful face was lined with weariness, and he actually rolled his red eyes at me.
"Your many, many threats have been duly noted, my dear," he sighed.
He waved a pale hand.
"Now, if you please."
With a huff that sounded more petulant than it felt, I spun back around and forged onward. I was still hurting from recent events, but I was a wolf, and I was healing. Physically, anyway. Despite my pain and desire not to appear as awed as I certainly was, I couldn't keep my eyes from wandering back to the town that the mixed breed had so lovingly proclaimed to be Mina. The sky was a blue so deep and vibrant I was sure I'd never seen the shade before, and oranges, pinks, and purples mingled in the distance as the sun prepared to set on another day. White, wispy clouds kissed the tips of the massive mountains, which were covered in a white substance I could only assume was snow, because I'd never seen snow in real life before. Near the foot of these mountains, trees taller than any I'd encountered in the Midlands or Western Coast made up a sea of emerald green that rolled on endlessly in three of the four directions. From my vantage point atop what seemed to me the 1,000,000th hill the mixed breed had forced me to climb since we'd fled the Western Coast, I had a view of three lakes nestled in various locations in the ocean of emerald trees. The setting sun had not quite escaped the sky, and its golden rays set the crystal-clear waters shimmering. I took a moment to fantasize about what it might feel like to slip into one of those lakes. I wondered if their magnificent waters were strong enough to wash away the stains that marred my insides, the blood that coated my hands. With my luck, there would be monsters living in the depths of those pools, and they would swallow me whole as soon as I dipped in a toe. This thought brought a very sharp, very specific memory back to me. The memory of a pale, white coat and large, terrified eyes.
the sound of water churning and a crowd screaming in excitement. A sea serpent with snake-like eyes and scaly skin, and a maw yawning wide to reveal a throat of beckoning darkness. Something touched my arm, and I jumped, my teeth clenching tight enough to make my sore jaw ache. Adriel pulled his hand away with such swiftness I barely saw him move. "We're getting close," he promised. "Then we can eat and rest." "I'm fine," I gritted out, and stalked past him in the direction we'd been heading. When I glanced back, he rolled his scarlet eyes again, and the urge to smack them right out of his pretty head struck me. But before I could decide whether or not to act on it, he said, "Whatever you're thinking, you're welcome to try." "Insufferable," I muttered, pushing onward with renewed purpose and refusing to look back again.
"Right back at you, dearest," the mixed breed mumbled.
We traveled the rest of the way in silence. If the sight of the place had awed me from afar, it absolutely astonished me as we drew close. Now there was nothing I could do to keep the wonder from my face, and I didn't even care to. Only 6 moon cycles ago, I'd thought that Marisol, the city by the sea and home of the former West Coast Packmaster, was surely the most stunning place to exist in all the worlds. Even before Adriel led me into the town of Mina, I could tell that Marisol's beauty paled in comparison to that of Adriel's professed home, like the vibrancy of the full moon compared to that of a single, insignificant star. Standing in the shade of the towering evergreens we'd been traveling through for millennia, I nearly had to grip the trunk of the tree nearest me to steady myself. "Goldie's here?" I asked, and didn't care how amazed the words sounded.
"Yes," Adriel replied. "She's been here since she left Dog's Head."
I took a deep breath. Then another. I nodded. "Okay, take me to her." The mixed breed lifted a dark brow at me, that vastly annoying humor appearing on his handsome face again, despite the weariness lining his exquisite features.
"Please," I gritted out.
A slow smile pulled up one side of his mouth.
"Of course," he said,
and led the way out of the rolling emerald trees and into the streets of the town itself. Despite my overwhelming anticipation at seeing my old friend again, I soon found myself once again lost in the wonders that seemed to abound in Mina. It was not the modernity that made it a marvel, nor was it a quaint quality, but rather a purposeful mixture of the two, as if the architects of the place had taken the best attributes of the old worlds and the new and combined them to create a category all its own. That's what Mina was, I realized, as we wandered further into the town. A category all its own. With those monstrous white-capped mountains providing a backdrop, the shadows of early evening had begun to creep in around the edges. The buildings were all different shapes and sizes, none tall enough to obscure views of the surrounding forest, with roofs poised at sharp angles and walls made of stones and varying proportions. Round windows offered glimpses at the occupants inside, many just sitting down for supper or an evening cup of tea. Golden light filled these circular frames, and my strong wolf ears picked up the sounds of laughter and the clanking of glasses and silverware.
"Is this where the masters live?" I asked. The only time I'd ever heard such sounds was in the presence of the masters.
For once, there was no humor in his expression when Adriel looked over at me.
"There are no masters here, Rook," he said,
his tone gentle but also firm.
"There are no dogs, no hounds, no whips or cages."
"So you keep saying," I mumbled, moving away from the mixed breed to investigate the sound of running water nearby, though I had not seen any rivers. When I reached the source, my head tilted at the sight. Walls made of the same stone used to build the houses encased a perfectly symmetrical stream of water. I hadn't even heard a shift of air to alert me to his movement when Adriel spoke beside me.
"It's called a canal," he told me. "We built it so that we can bring supplies into Mina with greater ease."
I blinked, still staring at the water.
You made this? I asked. How does one make a river?
Adriel's soft chuckle floated up on the evening breeze. It's not a river, it's a canal. And we made it using magic, of course.
Snorting, I caught sight of a bridge spanning the water and found my feet moving toward it, of their own accord.
No wonder you're so arrogant, I said over my shoulder. I guess I would be, too, if I could just magic myself an entire river.
It's a He sighed and shook his head.
Never mind. I get that it's a lot to take in, but you'll have plenty of time to explore later.
He paused, as if he was trying to decide whether or not to say something. Then he gave an almost imperceptible shake of the head, apparently deciding against it.
Are you hungry? He asked.
In answer, my stomach grumbled audibly. I gave him a look like this was a stupid question, and to my surprise, he only angled his head and half smiled.
He extended his elbow to me. This way, my lady, he said.
I was just about to tell him that I was no lady when a small, familiar voice called out to me.
Rook?
My head whipped toward the direction of the speaker, and my heart nearly melted in my chest. I blinked, then blinked again. My mouth fell open, and the voice that came out of it was the ghost of my normal tone.
Amara?
I whispered. A smile as bright as the sun on a summer morning spread over her pretty little face. Though I had only known the child for a handful of days, seeing those hazel eyes brought back the memories in a wave that almost had me swaying on my feet. She looked different than when I'd seen her last. Her cheeks were pink and full, her face clean, and her body filled in beyond just muscle and bone. She looked stronger, healthier, happier. I felt my throat trying to close and swallowed past it, shoving the emotions down deep. Instead, I opened my arms to the child, and Amara ran into them without hesitation.
You made it!
Amara squealed as I scooped her up into my grasp. Despite her obvious growth in the past half year, she was still as light as a feather in my strong arms. I was sure not to wince despite the pain our embrace caused me. I could feel that a wound on my back had split open again, and blood was running down the curve of my spine, but the sensation was easy to ignore. For a handful of moments that felt like extended heartbeats, I could only hold the child close and breathe deeply to suppress the rush of feelings that seemed ready to overtake me at a moment's notice as of late. By the time I set Amara back down on her feet, I had gained a reasonable amount of control over myself. How are you? I asked, studying her for any sign of hidden distress. But there was none. There was no veiled pain behind her smile, no tension in the soft curves of her shoulders. For lack of familiarity, it took me a moment to recognize that the child seemed completely, well, adjusted. Her response confirmed my observations.
I'm great, she said,
hopping up on her toes a bit in her excitement.
I'm so glad you're here.
Someone cleared their throat behind me, and I remembered that Adriel was standing there. I'd all but forgotten his presence in my shock at seeing Amara again. To add to my astonishment, the girl ran toward the mixed breed and threw herself into his arms. He scooped her up in much the same manner as I had, spinning her around in a circle until she giggled with amusement.
You're home too,
Amara said, and something about the inflection in her tone had me studying the mixed breed in a way I had not before. When Amara looked over at me with a wide, gapped-tooth grin, I saw that Adriel was watching me as well. And his expression was not one I'd seen him wear before.
I'm so glad you're back,
Amara said, wrapping her arms around Adriel's neck and nuzzling deeper into his grasp. In a voice low enough that I knew it was not meant for me to hear, the child whispered into Adriel's ear,
Every time you leave, I'm afraid you won't come back again.
Adriel smiled at her with none of the snarky undertone I was used to seeing when he wore the expression. Even I had to admit that when he smiled like that, I could see his appeal. The male was aesthetically stunning. Adriel placed his hands gently on either side of Amara's head and met her hazel eyes,
which were almost the exact same shade of my own. "I will always do my best to come back," he promised. "But if one day, for whatever reason, I don't..." Amara sighed, the exhale making her little chest rise and fall, and she finished the sentence for him.
"I will be fine. I will be strong. I will continue fighting the good fight."
The moment was intimate, and I knew I should look away, but I couldn't seem to do so. The smiles the two of them shared next were not only breathtaking, but somehow heartbreaking as well. When Adriel placed a gentle kiss on Amara's forehead, bending from his towering position to do so, like a father might a daughter, I wondered at the wonder of it all. Then another familiar voice spoke behind me. "Rook?" The air froze in my lungs as I turned on my heels. And there was Goldie. Chapter 2. For a moment, I could only stand rooted to the spot, staring at the person on the other side of the bridge, taking in her familiar red hair and thin frame, her big blue eyes and unhinged jaw. She stared back at me, no doubt seeing a similar look on my face. The voice that came out of me was a choked version of my usual tone. "Goldie?" I asked, and the name was only a whisper. Then I was running, and she was running. We collided a handful of heartbeats later, holding each other in a hug that revealed the horrible truth I'd spent half a year avoiding. Neither one of us had ever expected to see the other again. But here we were, and our embrace said that we could hardly believe it. Though I felt them burning in my soul, tears did not reach my eyes. It was as though I'd run out of them. Goldie, on the other hand, blubbered and sputtered as she finally released me from her death grip to hold me at arm's length. Her sharp blue eyes ran me up and down.
"You look like shit," she said,
tears rolling down her cheeks as she smiled. I looked down at myself. She was right, of course. I was still wearing the rags I'd been sent into the ring with, and blood and dirt coated me like a second skin. Most of my wounds had healed thanks to my supernatural blood, but some of them would take days to fully recuperate. Some would take much longer. Looking up, I managed to muster a crooked grin.
"I missed you too," I replied.
"Oh, what the hell?" she said, swiping the tears off her cheeks before planting a kiss on my cheek. And then another, and another. I stood captive as Goldie kissed me all over my face, brushing my lips, my forehead, the tip of my nose, and chin. Her feminine, familiar scent surrounded me, and that word came back to me again. Home. If home had a scent, Goldie was the one that it smelled like.
"It's like two dogs licking each other's faces," whispered a voice I also recognized.
I turned to see Yarick, the half-breed I'd sent Amara away with all those moon cycles ago. Goldie continued to stare at me as though she thought I might disappear, but to Yarick she said,
"Don't be insensitive, you oaf, and you don't complain when I do it to you."
I glanced between Yarick, with his easy smile and intimidating stature, and Goldie, with her soft shoulders and wicked grin, and blinked at the connection I sensed in the air. Anger welled up in me like a pot set to boil. My head whipped toward the mixed breed.
"I thought you said there were no slaves here, but you're forcing her to sleep with your friends?"
I took a threatening step toward him, but Adriel only quirked an eyebrow.
"Whoa,"
Goldie said, straight into my mind in the telepathic manner we shared.
"No one is forcing me to do anything, love. Yarick and I are in a relationship, an exclusive relationship. I really like him."
It took a few seconds for me to absorb this idea, and then I felt like an asshole. The only relationships I'd ever witnessed Goldie having were those with her customers, so maybe I couldn't be entirely blamed for jumping to this conclusion. But that didn't stop my cheeks from heating up with embarrassment. It took more effort than I would admit, but I met Adriel's scarlet gaze. "I'm sorry," I said. "I just assumed."
"It's fine," he replied, cutting me off. "It's a lot to get used to. I have business to attend to, so make yourself at home."
With this dismissal, he nodded to Yarick, and the two of them disappeared into thin air.
"I don't think he likes me," I mumbled,
sinking into the warm water while Goldie sat on the other side. The pool was big enough to fit 30 people, but we were the only two here for the late hour. We'd had some dinner with Amara before coming, and then the child had run off with a promise to see us in the morning, because she and the other pups had things to do. I'd found this more adorable than I could even express. Goldie huffed out a bit of air. Her eyes were shut, and her red-gold hair was piled in ringlets atop her head. She opened one eye to shoot a look at me.
"It kind of seemed like you're the one who doesn't like him," she replied. This took me aback a bit.
"Am I supposed to?" I asked. "He bought you from Beau Benedict like one might an apple at a market."
Goldie snorted.
She shut her eyes again and sank a little deeper into the warm water.
"And then he freed me. He saved me from that bastard hound Mackay, remember?"
"Well, he lied about it," I countered. "I've spent the last 6 moon cycles in agony wondering about you. He could have told me that you were okay."
"Maybe he was trying to protect this place, all the people here,"
I nodded. "Yes, all the people here, who worship him like a cult master." Goldie opened both eyes now, and she sat up, pinning me with her blue gaze.
"Why not a pack master?"
"Pack masters are bastards," I said. "Selfish, murderous bastards. And besides, Adriel's not a wolf."
"He has some wolf blood, but what does that matter? He's good to these people, and that's why they love him."
"He stole the silver book from me. I was tortured for days for it," I recalled. "He lied to me then, too. I wonder if maybe he hasn't got all of you fooled."
Goldie's blue eyes blazed like one of the Apollo blessed torches that lined the streets of Marisol. "What happened?" she asked, her voice deathly smooth in her sudden fury. So I told her. I told her about Riker, about the relationship that we'd had, and about how the hound had betrayed me. I told her about Marisol, the city with the sandy beaches and daunting cliffs, the air that smelled of sunshine and seaside. I told her about the friends I'd made there, about Kayleen and Oren and Ares. I told her about the party at Reagan Ramsey's house where I'd stolen the silver book that supposedly held the secret to freeing the dogs of the magical collars around their necks. I told her about the torture that had followed, about how Riker had come to the cave to retrieve me, and the cold dungeon where they'd cut into me, suffocated me, burned me, and beat me. Finally, I told her about the games, about the sea monster and the final match between Kayleen and I, about the wolfsbane Kayleen had been given so that she would go rabid, about how I'd freed the fire drake, and it had gobbled up the West Coast packmaster, Reagan Ramsey, like a feast on the harvest moon. And about how I'd ridden the fire drake to that cliff and awaited the arrival of the hounds, who I'd been sure were going to kill me for my treachery. Goldie sat silently through it all, watching me with those sharp blue eyes, and hardly moving an inch as she listened. Despite the depravity of what I was recalling, there was no pity in my friend as she looked at me. I was more grateful for this than she would ever be aware of. "Adriel got to you before the hounds?"
she asked, after I'd tapered off into silence, staring into the water as though the secrets of the realms glistened there.
"Yes, he did."
"But not before the torture?"
she added, and nodded her silent understanding of my reasons for not trusting the mixed breed.
"No," I agreed, "not before the torture."
"I'm sorry," she said. "It wasn't your fault." Silence fell between us for a moment. Then Goldie said,
"But was it his? If he hadn't taken the book from you, would Ramsey not have found it in the cave anyway, or tortured its location out of you? Is Adriel the one you're really mad at?"
I considered. Goldie's logic was both sturdy and annoying.
"Maybe not,"
I admitted.
"Maybe it's just the whole world."
Goldie shook her head, making her red-gold curls gleam in the dim light.
"Not the whole world, love,"
she told me silently.
"You sure?"
Her answering smile was like balm to a long aching wound.
"Pretty sure," she replied.
It sounded like a promise, but I wasn't at all sure it could be kept. I could have stayed in the bath all night.
Goldie explained that the waters were from a natural hot spring, so they never lost their warmth. Apparently, there were over a dozen hot springs in the area surrounding Mina, the three largest of which I'd spotted on the trek in. Goldie had taken me to a smaller pool, but it was no less magnificent for its stature. The water was a vibrant turquoise that revealed the rounded stones in its depths, and steam rolled off the spring surface like the clouds that kissed the tops of those enormous mountains, forever observing from the background. The lush emerald trees towering around the pool offered a sense of privacy that was only interrupted by the creatures skittering through the underbrush and swinging through the canopies. Above and beyond, an ebony night sky was flecked with stars, and the shadow of the Between Realms' dual crescent moons grinned down upon us like the lips of a smiling deity. The sun would be rising in a handful of hours, and I needed sleep, for if I ever decided I wanted to face the world again. Of course, as she had always been able to do, Goldie anticipated my needs instantly. She led me out of the forest, down a little trail that had been carved through the trees, and back into Mina. The town was beginning to settle down for the night, though I did see some people wandering from here to there. Though the night cast many of their faces into shadows, I watched them with great curiosity, trying to pinpoint the oddity that kept catching my eye. When I finally did, I could only shake my head in amazement. The peculiarity that I kept seeing in the people of Mina's gates, conversations, and body language was that they carried no sense of hurry, showed no signs of stress. They moved like free people, I realized. And for some illogical reason, a part of me hated them for it. I shoved this part away because I understood that it was ugly, that it could turn a good wolf into a bitter, dangerous creature. By the time Goldie and I reached the building where I would apparently be given a room, I was close to collapsing on my feet. Because of this exhaustion, I took little notice of my surroundings as my friend led me into the stone building, up a set of stairs and down a hall, and into a room where a bed was the final detail I would recall. I promptly fell into it and was claimed by darkness. Chapter 3. Riker visited me that night in my dreams. I was standing on the beach in Marisol, under a starry night sky, listening to the waves crash on the shore and breathing in the salty air. He came walking down the beach toward me, his footsteps silent in the sand. He looked exactly as I remembered him. Blue eyes and strong jaw, golden skin and sculpted muscles, the stern, smug expression he wore that slipped into an easy smile when we were alone. At first, I could only stare, rooted to the spot in which I stood. Somehow I remembered how to draw air, and I pulled my gaze away from him with massive effort. "I should kill you where you stand," I told him. Riker nodded, rubbing at the stubble, dusting his jaw. "I'm sorry," he said. My eyes burned. I shook my head, afraid that if I spoke, my voice would betray me. I fixed my gaze on the dark, churning ocean. "I'm sorry," he repeated. "Please," I managed. "Just leave me alone. Can I not have some peace, even in my own dreams?"
"There was no other way to reach you. I don't know where you are."
He tried to reach out a hand and touch me, but I jerked out of range, shooting him a warning look. "What are you talking about?" I asked. "What the hell is this?"
"It's called dream writing," Riker said. "I paid a sorcerer to help me. I needed to see you."
I stared out at the ocean, trying to make sense of it all. I couldn't bear to look over at him. I hated the way my body wanted to lean into his, despite his treachery, the way my heart seemed to call out for him, despite his treatment of it.
"Where are you?"
he asked. I flashed my teeth as my jaw clenched. "Why? So you can come and drag me back to slavery? So you can have me tortured, make me fight in the ring?" Now my anger rose enough that I did turn to face him, and I could have easily kicked him in the nuts as leaned into his touch. "Fuck you, hound," I said, spitting the words out like venom. "Fuck you and every other hound in all the realms.
Fuck you and your self-righteous ways. Fuck you and your life.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?